And we're live. It's On Texas Football, Longhorn live stream on Tuesday night with myself, Bobby Burton, and Jerry Hamilton of Inside Texas and On Three. Jerry, news breaking day and night, kind of this time of year. It's National Signing Day week. Texas Longhorns are in on two players still for this signing period. Warren Roberson, a safety out of Red Oak High School in the Metroplex, and Deuce Robinson, a tight end out of Phoenix. Also happening this week, Texas and the Big 12 released its 2023 football schedule. Jerry and I will be talking about that. And then third, the Longhorns split a pair of tough games. The Longhorns going to Knoxville on Saturday evening and losing to Rick Barnes' Volunteers, but then come back on Monday night at Moody and beat Baylor. The Longhorns now in basketball lead the Big 12 with a 7-2 conference record. Jerry, let's start it off with recruiting. What's the latest on Roberson and Deuce Robinson?
Yeah, nothing that we haven't reported on Warren Roberson. I believe he's announcing Friday the 3rd. That mean he won't sign earlier tomorrow, send in his LOI, wherever that's going to be. Look, I haven't changed my RPM prediction for Texas. I don't have any reason to change that. I think TCU's in the fight. I think USC's in the fight. But I think there's a lot of positive momentum for Texas. Chatter in the DFW area this morning, or yesterday, I should say, was still Texas in a good position for Warren after the weekend. Jonte Cook, Malik Muhammad have been working that one hard from the recruit and player angles at Texas. They all grew up in the same area, Dallas. Warren played youth sports with both of those guys at various times. So I think Texas in a good position to flip the On Three consensus four-star safety from TCU. Lincoln Riley, you know, he made that unofficial visit 2 weekends ago. Lincoln came by the school last week. So USC, we can't discount their chances, but I think right now Texas is in a pretty good spot.
I want to talk to you about Deuce Robinson next. But first, or excuse me, not Deuce Robinson. I want to talk to you next about the Texas football schedule. But first, I want to say thank you to our sponsor for this live stream, and that's Energy Texas. Energy Texas is for Texans by Texans. When Energy Texas becomes your energy provider, you're dealing with and calling people in the great state of Texas, not back east, not overseas, Texans. We're proud to be from the greatest state in the union and prouder still to be fighting for the little guy against big power. That's www.energytexas.com. We're also going to be taking your questions on the live stream tonight, as we always try to do. So please get those in. Jerry, let's start with the let's talk a little bit about the Big 12 schedule that came out today. Longhorns only have 4 home games in conference. Matt, our producer, can you put up that schedule for folks when you get a chance? Longhorns only have 4 conference home games, excluding the game in Dallas, of course, with OU. Also, they play every single Texas team in a round robin type format. So Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, Houston, they're playing them all. And every other Texas team is playing every other Texas team. So it's truly a round robin amongst those 5 teams.
Yeah, you know, my first reaction to looking at this schedule is you can get to the college football playoff with this schedule. That was my initial reaction. You know, if you go win week 2 at Alabama, and look, I don't think this is the Alabama that we're used to seeing. I just don't, they're going to be breaking in a new quarterback next year. They're losing a lot of pieces. Now they have really good players. They're always going to have really good players, but they aren't Georgia right now. Bottom line. Now they'll be jacked up for this game, but they aren't Georgia right now. And it's taken Kirby a long time to get to that point, but that was my first thought after looking at the game at Houston, which obviously is going to draw a lot of internet chatter on Inside Texas message board and whatnot. But I'll tell you what, there couldn't be a better schedule for Sarkisian to go win 10, 11 games and get to the Big 12 title game and push for a playoff spot.
Well, I mean, you take Alabama out of there, Rice and Wyoming. Rice made a bowl game this year, I think, at 5-7.
Right.
Those two you think are wins, their home games. Then you go to Baylor early in the season. You get TCU, Iowa State, Texas Tech, and Kansas State actually is the first of that 4-game stretch. That's a pretty strong end to your season as well.
No, it is. But look, the way I look at this is I don't think Baylor next year is going to be as good as they were this year. I don't think TCU is going to be as good as they were this year. Iowa State, not sure what to make of Iowa State, but you get Kansas State, the Big 12 champion at home. You get Texas Tech, who's on the up, and Joey McGuire at home. I thought they signed some really good speedy players in this class, and Texas will be ready for that game this year, right? Hopefully there's a lot on the line for the Longhorns. But the Kansas, a program on the rise, you get at home. I don't know what to expect from Oklahoma at this point next year, but the tougher games I believe you have at home. At TCU, always going to be a tough game, but they lose a lot, Bobby. I mean, Baylor, I think Baylor's headed in the wrong direction. I'll say it right now. It's just such a favorable schedule for me for the Longhorns. I can't imagine the coaching staff looked at this schedule and didn't think the same. We got a shot.
I'm looking at this right now, and I feel like I understand where you're going with it, Jerry. I just feel like it's one of those situations where, you know, you would like to – ideally you get Kansas at the back end of the schedule when they've been beat up a little bit.
Right.
And, true. You know, that's a team that is one deep, they're okay. Two deep, they're not very good, right? We'll see how it goes. I agree that, you know, Iowa State may be the odd team this year because they have a good quarterback coming back. Matt Campbell has had a down year now. Let's see what he does as a bounce back year. He's got some guys that have a little bit more experience now. So we'll have to wait and see what comes of the Big 12 schedule. We'll be talking about that and other things the rest of the night. Feel free to get your questions in right now. Jerry, I want to flip forward to the basketball team. Longhorns, number 10 in the country, taking on Baylor last night. The Bears came in ranked number 11. I think Texas was 17-4, and maybe Baylor was 16-5. Yeah, yep. Something like that. But Baylor as a team and Scott Drew as a coach has had Texas's number, period. last night, I thought Texas took the fight to them at the outset. And followed through with it and hung on to win. Good team win last night for the Longhorns.
A great bounce back on short rest. Both teams had short rest, obviously, but Baylor had a drive. They played Arkansas at home. Texas traveled to Knoxville and back late night Saturday. So not much time to prepare. And maybe that helped Texas in this game, honestly. The quick bounce back might have helped Texas after the Tennessee game. Rodney Terry didn't have to have much of a message after that game. You look, the Texas team, we talk about it. The Texas team knows what's on the line here. That was a must-win game for them, and I think they played like it because not that they're sitting there thinking, well, we can't beat Kansas or Kansas State, but you got to hold serve at home. You already lost one home game to Kansas State, and you know you have the tough stretch coming to two road games. So I think the kids really brought it. Jabari Rice, I mean, what more can you say about the guy? He's going to make a lot of money playing basketball. I don't know if it'll be off the bench at the NBA level or if it'll be at the highest overseas level of the G League, but he's got a career in basketball. And one of the things I said on 104.9 The Horn this morning, Bobby, is, you know, being in the gym a little bit this summer, he's got a little Roshon Johnson to him. He's got that leadership. He's got that we're going to win this game mentality. And I think it's really showing. It showed at Oklahoma. It showed last night. I mean, he's a guy that helps you win basketball games, period, whether he's making shots or not. But then when he starts making shots, it's a different – and Texas had to have it because Marcus Carr was in foul trouble. One of the other things I liked last night was Tyrese Hunter shooting it 17 times. I don't care how many times he made it. I want to see an aggressive Tyrese Hunter. Texas has to have an aggressive Tyrese Hunter. He can shoot himself out of the slump. He'll get back 100% healthy, but he's got to build his confidence back. And if that means he's 5-17 and 6-18 at Kansas State, I don't care. The ball needs to leave his hand. What he doesn't need to do is be 2-8 or 3-9. He's got to attack. He's got to show confidence in himself. He's got to get to where he's making shots. Because, look, Texas has to have two of the three senior guards, or experienced guards, I should say, play well every night. But if you can get in the march and all three are kind of clicking, then you got a real chance. And I think Texas, look, they're sitting on that 2-3 seed line. I really think they're going to fluctuate between 2-3 seed, 3-4 seed line. the whole way through Big 12 because the rest of the games are tough. At Kansas State Saturday, they'll stay in Kansas City and then play at Kansas Monday. I mean, that's two brutal road games. But luckily, they don't, you know, they're in the state of Kansas for both of them. But this schedule's, it's tough. You got to hold serve at home. Your home games left now are Iowa State, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and then Kansas. So you, with this win last night, you're 7-2. You've set yourself up to have a shot to go 12-6 in conference. If they do better than that, I mean, tip of the hat to Rodney Terry. He's probably the head coach at Texas, honestly. But if they can get to 12-6, they're a 3 seed at worst in the NCAA tournament.
Jerry, I had one question come in on Inside Texas before we started the live stream. They want to know where Texas sits right now with Ron Holland, the basketball player out of Duncanville that has been committed to Texas and showed up for a Texas home game, I guess last weekend. Is Texas still in there with Ron Holland? What's going on there?
Yeah, look, I was by Duncanville 3 weeks ago now. Spent some time in the with the basketball staff in the gym. Ron Holland wants to be at Texas. His family wants him at Texas. That's the reason he made the decision has not changed. What'll be interesting, and everybody, a lot of people think, oh, he'll just go to Arkansas. I was told Ron didn't really like Fayetteville. Not that he didn't like Musselman, Arkansas. He didn't really like Fayetteville. He really likes Austin. He likes Texas. He likes the idea of building his brand in his home state. That was Chris Beard, Rodney Terry's message to him. That has not changed. You know, what will be the key determining factor with Ron Holland is where Rodney Terry's at. I really believe that. And I'm not saying Rodney has to be the head coach or Ron Holland doesn't go to Texas, but where Rodney Terry's at next year I think is going to be so impactful in Ron's final decision. But he's still locked in with Texas. They're taking it slow. They like what they see on the court. They kids like how – the tempo Texas is playing at this year. And that's what the beginning of the season, Chris Beard, Rodney Terry, all those guys, you know, they said repeatedly they were going to play faster and they are playing faster. They're playing at 73-ish possessions a game. They're averaging 80 points a game. That helps you in recruiting, no doubt about it, because guys want freedom. They want to go somewhere they play faster and have a chance to go to the NBA in their mind. So I think all the things that why Ron committed to Texas are currently still in place, save Chris Beard. Yep. So what Rodney Terry's at is going to tell the story, but Texas fans right now, Ron still wants to be at Texas. AJ Johnson still wants to be at Texas.
Interesting. All right, let's get to some other questions. We're going to open it up for questions tonight. Again, Big 12 schedule is on the docket. We want to talk a little bit about that. We've got football recruiting going on. We've got basketball as well to talk about. Anything and everything tonight is on the agenda. So you guys feel free to fill up the question box and we'll try to get to them. Let's start with Freelance Society. He hit the super chat. Thank you. He says, I think Texas has the hardest schedule overall out of Big 12 teams. Maybe Kansas State. OU has the easiest. So Matt, our producer, if you'll put up the Big 12 schedule, I think he's right about Kansas State having the toughest schedule here. Look at their games starting, I think, in mid-October, Jerry. They play the Texas gauntlet. Texas Tech, then TCU, then Houston, then Texas, then Baylor. All in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, they play them all.
Well, and look, too, they also have Missouri and UCF. I mean, they have a tough schedule. They have a tough big schedule, Big 12 schedule, but they have a tough schedule in general. I tend to agree with that. And then Iowa State on the back end, you just don't know.
Where they're going to be. I mean, you just don't know.
Yeah, and Oklahoma as far as the easiest Big 12 schedule, I think it is.
I looked at it. Of the six teams that finished in the top half of the Big 12, OU plays the least.
Yeah. That's true. Absolutely.
So I think they play three of them. They play Texas, Oklahoma State, and TCU.
Yeah.
Of the top six in the Big 12 last year, Oklahoma only plays three of them.
Yeah.
I mean, and they weren't one of the top six. Like Texas was one of the top six. Texas plays four of them.
Yeah.
In this one. So,
Anyways.
I'm not a big believer.
I do agree. Oklahoma has the easiest schedule looking at it. Um, I, I I just really like to. I like Texas' schedule. I mean, is it toughest? Maybe Kansas State, probably. But I just like the schedule Texas has. I don't know what to tell guys. I really like the schedule for Texas. Oh, look, I think UCF's going to knock off a couple of people next year. I don't have any doubt about it. People think UCF, but their talent level's a little higher than what people think. I think Gus Malzahn is made for this conference in a lot of ways right now. And they're going to knock a couple of people off. So I think it's easy to look at these schedules and say, oh, well, you have UCF on the schedule, right? UCF, to me, is better than BYU in the Big 12.
Hey, here's an interesting one. A lot of people are already saying West Virginia's coach is going to be out after week four. Neil Brown is definitely on the hot seat, right?
Yeah.
But he plays Penn State, then has a walkover, should be a walkover, in Duquesne, then has Pitt and Texas Tech, followed by TCU on the road. First five games and then a bye. People are already predicting the guy's going to be walking in week five.
Well, it looks like it to me too. But then if he beats Penn State week one, where are we at? But I mean, that is a schedule that if you're on the hot seat, you don't want to look at the start of the season. You only have one guaranteed win. Somebody said maybe Texas Tech is the toughest.
I'm looking at it. West Virginia is should not be very good this year. I'm not a big believer in BYU. I don't think it's any different. I mean, Texas has OU versus West Virginia.
Yeah.
Texas has Iowa State instead of Central Florida. I think I would take Texas' schedule as a little bit harder than Texas Tech's.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too.
I mean, the only thing is they go on the road. They do go on the road to BYU, Texas. And BYU and Texas are on the road. Baylor, BYU, and Texas are on the road.
So I mean, you could actually argue BYU has the toughest schedule when you look at it. I mean, Cincinnati, TCU, Tech, Texas, I mean, West Virginia, Iowa State, OU, and Oak State.
Yeah,
that's going to be a tough schedule if you're BYU. Bring it on.
It's very interesting because it's hard to even contemplate Cincinnati, some of these teams in the Big 12.
Right.
And that therein lies the problem a little bit with the
Cincinnati,
what's left in the Big 12. Yeah. I mean, that hold on a second. Cincinnati, they have a new coach.
Right.
I mean, totally new program, no more quarterback. I mean, you don't even know what they're going to look like. Half their team, I mean, a lot of their starters transferred because of the coach. And so you just don't know what it's all going to look like.
I think of the four newcomers, UCF's the best team next year.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Going to another question. This one's going to be recruiting based. Rob is saying Mike Farrell, one of my former coworkers, actually hired Mike back in 2001, if y'all will believe that, when I was just a wee lad. Mike is predicting Deuce Robinson to Texas. I think that's all it is a prediction. I'll just put it that way. He's guessing. It's not with insider knowledge. Would you agree with that comment, Jerry?
Yeah, I would. I mean, look, we had a report today on Inside Texas that Texas believes they're very much in the mix. We broke the news that Jeff Banks, Kyle Flood were in home last Thursday. That was 3 days after USC and Georgia. And one thing I've heard twice today is the USC in home Monday made a difference. But the key, I think one of the keys with these recruitments, especially this one, is where's the family going to be long term? They're not from Arizona. There's a chance they don't stay in Arizona. So where are they going to move? I think that's something to follow with this recruitment. Look, I mean, I think Georgia's been in the best position for a while. The use of the tight ends, what they do with Brock Bowers, and I'm not saying Deuce is that level athlete as Brock Bowers. Deuce is a very talented kid. But, you know, look, Georgia has a lot going for them. They're the best program in college football. They're going to have two first-rounder picks at tight end after next year. We'll see what happens with Todd Monken. But I think the biggest news today, outside of for Texas fans, that Texas feels like they're in it after the in-home, is he's not planning to sign Wednesday. And there's a chance he doesn't sign this week. And there's a chance he doesn't sign before April 1. And then there's a chance he doesn't sign at all. He just shows up, signs scholarship papers, the school he picks, and he shows up in June. And he's working out for Major League Baseball scouts, and the July 17th, 19th is the MLB draft in Los Angeles. So there's so many moving parts to this recruitment right now. it's going to go back and forth. There's going to be a lot of chatter on all sides of it, baseball, football, the combination, MLB. Then if news gets out that the family's moving somewhere, how could that affect this recruitment? And I think it would. So we'll see what happens with Deuce. I think George has been in the best position for a while. We'll see what happens.
Yep. All right. Albert Pola coming in with a comment. I made a somewhat short-sighted comment earlier saying that Iowa State doesn't really lose anybody. They actually are losing a big receiver. Xavier Hutchinson is gone for them, and he was most of their offense last year. But we'll see exactly what that means, how much – I mean, was he really a big-time player, or was he a product of an offense? I think he's a good player. I think he's a pro player. I don't necessarily think he's a first-round pick. So right. He's eminently replaceable. And so we'll see how that goes. But I still fully feel like the quarterback at Iowa State is streaky enough and good enough to beat some teams that maybe an Iowa State shouldn't be.
We'll have to see what they look like on offense scheme-wise next year as well.
Yeah, Tom Manning is gone. Their offensive coordinator got the axe.
Yeah.
I think he hired somebody from a small school too, right?
That's worked well for Mike Gundy. So we know Matt Campbell knows what he's doing. So it'll be interesting to see what they look like offensively next year.
Good question here from Mark Valdez. Biggest surprise commit in the 2023 class. Jerry, you give yours and I'll give mine.
Mine, I'm going to go with Sadir Mitchell. Just because Texas hasn't recruited New Jersey. And yes, Kyle Flood had connections. Bo Davis had a great relationship. But Texas just hasn't signed guys from the Garden State.
No.
So that one's going to be mine. And, I would throw Cedric Baxter in there, but here's the difference. So Sashard Choice had been recruiting him for 2 years. Texas is moving to the SEC. You're already seeing Texas have more success in the SEC region. I'm actually going to have a story tomorrow, Bobby, about the Texas national footprint expanding under Sarkisian. I think people will be shocked this 2024 class. How many kids have been offered nationally and out of how many states? But I'm going with Sadir Mitchell just because New Jersey's not an area Texas signs players from.
Yeah, I completely agree. It wasn't a surprise to readers of Inside Texas. It was not a surprise to those of us who followed his recruitment. But my biggest surprise by far was the fact that Arch Manning actually ended up at Texas.
That's a good one.
And I'm not trying to denigrate our reporting on was that, hey, Texas is in the thick of it. We think Texas has a shot. All of those things. I'm surprised that Texas had a shot.
Yeah.
Coming off a 5-7 season. I mean, Texas was 5-7 when he committed to Longhorns. Going up against Alabama, Nick Saban doesn't lose too many that he wants. Kirby Smart just took a walk-on quarterback to a national championship and won it. Now he's won two of them with it. But
Clemson was an offer. I mean, everybody.
Right. Everybody wanted him. Steve Sarkisian and the Texas Longhorns end up with him. That was my biggest surprise because as much as you want to not wear orange colored glasses, the three schools that were involved at that point in time, Texas was low man on the totem pole when it came to proving it on the field in the last 10 years. Now Texas has more powerful alumni, better long-term connection. You can argue all of those things. I get that those are mightily important academics to the Mannings. But that surprised me because that was the one that said, okay, hello, Steve Sarkisian's here. And this is going to be a fun year to cover recruiting for Texas.
And it's a great point on that. That made the recruiting class, especially coming off of 5-7. And to your point, I mean, look, at the time too, when he committed, they don't know when Texas is going to the SEC, right? I mean, and all the Mannings have played in the SEC. Their entire careers. And just to your point, I mean, look, what's interesting about Steve Sarkisian is I really believe he's kind of their modern day Cutcliffe. Phil Fulmer had a hand in Peyton Manning going to Tennessee, yeah. But David Cutcliffe was huge in Archie Manning's eyes, right? So much so that he's the head coach at Ole Miss, and that's where Eli went. So I think there's – what's interesting about the Manning family is they get past wins and losses, and they really look at development. And to me, I thought that was the biggest feather in the cap for Steve Sarkisian, is that the Mannings, the last Manning that's a quarterback, rolled with Steve Sarkisian, and that family rolled with Steve Sarkisian because they all had opinions. They know Sark. They were with him in Las Vegas at one of the AFCA things every year, right? But this family put a stamp of approval on Steve Sarkisian. I think that put a stamp of approval on Steve Sarkisian for all the recruits in the 23 class and moving forward.
All right. From Jay, the activist, super chat. Any chance Deuce goes pro? I'm assuming he's talking about baseball. We know he had a workout with the Dodgers a couple of weeks back before the Polynesian Bowl All-American game that he played in out in Hawaii. Have you heard anything about him and pro baseball, Jerry?
I think it's legitimate. I really think it's legitimate. That doesn't mean I'm predicting he's going in the MLB draft. All this is going to depend on where you get drafted, right? But I think for the people that kind of laugh at it, you know, guys that are 6'6", 230, have a little power and can run, those are guys they want to try to develop. So it's him getting drafted in the first five rounds, not that I've scouted him or I'm an MLB scout. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, let's be real. That wouldn't shock me. But we'll see. He's not playing high school baseball as a senior. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how that affects his draft status.
Well, one of the things you said, Jerry, and we talked about is it's possible that he goes and enrolls in a college in June.
Yep.
Major League Baseball draft is what, mid-July, the 17th or the 19th? It's possible he tries to play both.
That's right.
And he could actually play pro baseball. I mean, Ricky Williams did it. Other people have done it. It would be odd. It hasn't really been done of late, but it's something that we could see happen. I mean, do you have anything you would say about that?
No, I mean, I think it'll be interesting, though, not playing high school baseball this year. That'll be interesting to see how that affects his draft status. I mean, look, I go all the way back, Bobby. We go all the way back to Adam Dunn, right? Adam Dunn was hitting 450-foot bombs a senior season, okay? Adam Dunn literally built a new field for Duquesne and turned it around because he's hitting home runs on the softball practice field. He got drafted in the sandwich pick. He came to Texas for a year. Then the Reds talked him out of it, said, hey, the Sims guy signed. What are you doing here? We're going to throw some more money at you. And then 400 home runs later, right? The rest is history. So I could see him playing both. I could see him maybe starting in college and seeing if a college, a Major League Baseball team can talk him out of it, depending on where he gets drafted. But look, the great thing for the Robinson family, they literally have all the leverage. He's a five-star that didn't sign in December. Smart. Number one tight end in the country. The best guy left on the board at the position. They know it. I think the important thing for Texas fans is if he doesn't sign this week or even in the early signing period or the late signing period, which runs through April 1st, I think Texas is going to continue to recruit him until he either commits to a school or shows up on a campus. They're not giving up on him. He's a kind of a bonus right now for Texas. But he's that talented of a player. They're not going to back out of this recruitment until they're said, nope, you have no chance.
I just feel like you don't know until I've been following the MLB draft and high school players so long ago. I mean, Chip Ombres comes to mind. And I mean, these guys that signed with A&M and then never showed up because he played pro baseball. You know, I also remember going to Adam Dunn's high school. and when he was in high school, and do you know Adam Dunn, you know, all these, he's a huge kid for a 16, 17 year old guy. When I was scouting him, do you know he led Greater Houston, not in batting average? I don't even think he led them in home runs across the city. He led in steals.
Yeah. Because nobody pitched him.
They walked him. They walked him all the time. And so he just stole second base. Hey, thank you to Antonio Harris for the super chat. We appreciate that very much. Jerry and I really do appreciate your help on that. A couple more questions here. I want to keep going. Jerry, what do you think Rodney Terry needs to do to keep the job at Texas? You kind of outlined that a little bit with the 12-6 Big 12 record, but doesn't he have to do something in the tournament too, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you can't be a 3 seed and get not bounced by a 14, right? That's not going to work. The question is, do you have to go to a Sweet 16? Do you have to win one game? Look, if Texas finishes top 10 in the country, top 12 or in that area code, in the best conference in college basketball, and you sit there and you go 12-6 and win 23 games, maybe 24 if you win one of the Big 12 tournament, he's made a pretty good argument. Right. The whole key, though, and I don't think any of us know this yet, does he have to get to the Sweet 16? That seems like a bit of a stretch to me. I think it's the body of work. I think it's how the kids have responded to him. I think that if Rodney gets to 12-6 and Texas gets to 12-6 in conference, it'd be hard for me to argue he doesn't deserve a shot at this job because how many coaches have taken over in this circumstance? Yes, he has a very experienced team, but how many coaches have taken over in a circumstance like this and then held the thing together and then went on to have success in the toughest conference? And yeah, you need to do something in the NCAA tournament, even if you win a game. But look, man, I would have a hard time arguing against him if they got the 12-6, won a Big 12 tournament game, won an NCAA tournament game. I mean, because here's the thing I firmly believe. Without Rodney Terry and Chris Ogden on this staff right now, who Ogden is Texas basketball as much as TJ Ford is Texas basketball, right? They were on the same Final Four team together. Ogden coached under Rick. He loves this university. Rodney Terry's pretty much a Longhorn without graduating from Texas, right? He coached on Rick Barnes' staff for years. He knows this state. He's the primary recruiter. Though I believe without those two guys, this season would have absolutely fallen apart. And I think Rodney deserves credit. Chris Ogden on the peripheral deserves credit for that. But if Rodney can get to 12-6, win a tournament game, win a Big 12 tournament game, it's going to be hard for me to argue he doesn't deserve a chance. I just don't know how you argue that.
Yeah. Let's give it a shout out to our sponsor, Energy Texas. Energy Texas is for Texans by Texans. When Energy Texas becomes your energy provider, you're dealing with and calling people in the state of Texas, not back east, not overseas, Texans. We're proud to be from the greatest state in the union and prouder still to be fighting for the little guy against big power. For those of you not from the state of Texas reading this and happen to be watching it, there's deregulated power in the state of Texas. So you actually get to choose your energy provider in much of the state. And Energy Texas is one of those places that has done a really, really good job for a number of Texans the last couple of years here, especially going through what everything went through last summer with the rolling brownouts and all this other stuff. Jerry, you got anything else you want to gravitate to real quick before I open it up to further questions?
One other thing. I don't think Texas – there's been some questions. I don't think Texas is moving on a JUCO defensive lineman late in this class. I think they feel pretty good about where they're at heading the next season. And that kind of leads into spring football. One of the biggest questions for me is what Dre Bledsoe and Chris Ross, where they headed long-term as far as their frames. I think that may determine what the number is in 2024 defensive line for Texas. But I think right now they're fine with where they're at.
Hey, Jerry, neither you nor I have heard anything of late on the offensive assistant special to the head coach, or special assistant to the head coach on offense of late. Have you? I have not heard anything. I was going to try to check on it tonight.
Yeah, I have not.
Okay. I also have this for Xavier Delgado. I'm also checking on this later tonight. Have we heard anything about moving to the SEC? If I get anything, I will post that on Inside Texas in tomorrow morning's post. I am hopeful to get some news there. I will say that both myself and Eric Nalin and other parties inside Texas continue to hear it's the 2024 season. When that will be announced is a different story. So, Xavier, thanks for asking and trying to get that information. That's where we're at right now, at least with it. Justin Yarbrough, have there been any reports on the early enrollees and what teams jump up this year in the Big 12 and which teams fall? Jerry, you already predicted Baylor may fall a little bit.
Yeah, I'm predicting that one. I could say four offensive linemen. Of the early enrollees that came in, Jaden Chapman came in really good shape from what I hear. The other big guys are continuing the body reshaping. You know, Connor Stroh's done a great job on his own with that, and that'll continue here in the spring with the offseason, then in the spring football in the summer. But I've heard all, DeAndre Moore, Jonte Cook, they're putting in their work. They came in to compete, which I think is great news for Texas fans in that wide receiver room. Cedric Baxter, I hadn't heard anything negative. I think his body's going to look so different in August from what it was when he reported. He's a typical Sunshine State kid. You see 6'1.5", 215, you think he's a rocked up, just chiseled guy. He's not. He's strong naturally, but just wait until you see the pictures from his senior year and before his first game. But I hear that the early enrollees they've come in to compete. They're working hard. And I haven't heard anything negative so far.
Eric Nalin brought up Malik Muhammad as a guy that's off to a quick start in the secondary as well.
He's prepared to be, right, Bobby? Yep. I mean, well,
we talked about it. It's these guys that you come from a certain stock, and I'm not, and what I mean by that is he's got relatives that played in the NFL, played in college football. They know what success looks like.
Yeah.
It's easy to say, oh, my brother or cousin or uncle did this and this is how he did it. All I have to do is do that. Right. And I know it's words are easier than actions, but to have someone close to you have that experience is invaluable. That's just, that's just the bottom line. And it allows you to push that to the forefront of your mind and really act on it. All right. What about teams, Jerry? I do think Iowa State's going to make a jump a little bit this year. They lost too many close games last year. I think TCU may fall, but I'm not saying it's not going to be a free fall by any stretch. I kind of think OU's got to be better than what they were this year. I mean, I don't know how much better is the question, because really they did get an offensive lineman from Stanford that I think will start, but their O-line is not going to be great shakes. They're going to be really young on defense again.
Yep.
They have some firepower on offense, but
Marvin Mims went pro.
Yep. Do you have anybody else that you think is really on the way up in the Big 12? I like Iowa State in that regard. Anybody else? UCF maybe for you?
Yeah, I think UCF's going to knock off a couple, but I think Texas Tech under Joey's going to make Texas Tech competitive because he has such great energy. I mean, it's such a positive energy there.
But he did a good job on his OC hire, in my opinion.
But here's the thing about Joey, just being around Cedar Hill in high school for all those years. It's a great energy, but it's a physicality with energy, right? It's not rah-rah players coach guy. It's a great energy if you're a player there, but there's also a physical element to it. You don't have the success he had without being a physical team. Winning those state titles, the people they beat, they won some tough games, some physical games in the fourth quarter. Joey knows what he's doing, and I think they recruited some really good speed this year. So it's not going to surprise me. But again, and here's the other thing with Tech: I'm a big Baron Morton fan now. I think he's going to be a drafted guy one day, and so I think they have a quarterback, which makes them dangerous.
I'm laughing at this one because it's so true. Can we talk about, from James Williams, can we talk about how we don't play Oklahoma State the one year we probably beat them?
It's so true. How many players do they have right now?
It's just so true. It's funny. I think Oklahoma State only plays one Texas school in this new schedule. I was talking about this with Joe Cook earlier. Literally, while the five Texas teams play a round robin, that's interesting to me because they're all original Southwest Conference members. The original Big Eight members, Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State gets treated like a stepchild. I mean, they don't play. It's kind of interesting. They're the ones that get thrown to the wolves to play all the other teams, I feel like. So we'll see how that goes. But thanks for the question. And I couldn't agree more with you, James. At some level, Spencer Sanders finally quits, calls it quit, and then we're there. Poke Casino asking about Malik Murphy having a chance to play this year.
He has a shot. When we have multiple Maliks. Is it Malik Murphy?
Malik Muhammad or Malik Murphy? Murphy, I think, is going to be – he's going to be hard. That's a hard one.
Malik Murphy's 2A.
What now?
Yeah, I think Malik Murphy's 2A's. Malik Murphy, Bobby, is – yeah, but let's say Malik Murphy first, and we'll go to Malik Muhammad. I think what will be most interesting about Malik Murphy is when you go through a mechanical overhaul, and they really – he said Malik Murphy – and they really shorten your release. When that peripheral vision happens, it's easy to do it when you're throwing on air, right? It's easy to think about it and think about the mechanics. But then when the walls start closing in, that peripheral vision sees rushers, you have to step up and play quarterback. Do you go back to what you've always done, which is a long-range motion, or are you able to take that mechanical change to the pocket when it's live bullets? If he can do that, he's going to have a chance. Is he going to play this year? We'll see. My opinion is Arch may get in a couple of games and save his red shirt, right? I mean, because it's all going to be dependent on the jump Quinn makes from your first year starting to second year. If Quinn has a really good year, you got to think the NFL draft is where he's going to head.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be his third year out. And I feel like that's – I don't want to say a long shot. I'd say that's a 20% or below shot based on how he played this year. Am I counting it out, though? And the answer is no. Murphy's not only going to have competition in Quinn Ewers, obviously Arch Manning as well, even though I will say this much. We both know somebody that talked to a couple of coaches on the Texas staff. They really, really think Malik Murphy's got something, a little something to him. You know what I mean? He's got a spine. Yeah. Does that make sense to you? He's got a little will there. This comes from Dodgers 988 fan. What time does Warren Roberson sign to Texas tomorrow? Hook him. Can't be that presumptuous, first of all. Let me take this one, Jerry, for you, okay? Roberson and Red Oak are not having their signing ceremony for National Signing Day 2 until Friday. Roberson himself has not come out and said, I'm signing today. I'm signing Wednesday or I'm signing Friday. We don't know when for sure he's doing it. Justin Wells found out this information that their signing ceremony isn't until Friday. Steve Sarkisian, however, the Texas head coach, will speak to the media tomorrow about the signing class. We'll have some reports on that as well. But it is a situation where Warren Roberson has not said much publicly during his recruitment. And as it winnows down to the last few hours, I don't think he's going to start talking now. So that's my opinion of that. Jerry, you agree with that or have other thoughts?
Oh, yeah. No, I think he could sign tomorrow and not tell anybody. The college will keep it quiet until a Friday ceremony. I could see that happening very easily with Warren.
Yep. From Freelance Society, obviously UT will recruit Texas kids, but do you think the strategy for the staff is going after out-of-state guys? I'm betting Sark will get the most compared to past UT coaches. They are definitely leaving no stone unturned in the Southeast. Florida and Georgia, I've never, even with Charlie Strong, who had all those Florida ties, I've never seen Texas be as active in Florida in Georgia before.
I don't want to give away my story tomorrow, Bobby, but they've offered about 40 kids combined from those two states in 24. Now, never have we seen that. Ever. And I think it's around 65 offers from Louisiana to Florida.
So including Mississippi and Alabama as well as Louisiana.
Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida. Unbelievable numbers. So that piece I'm going to break out in the morning is going to be that Texas expanding the national footprint under Steve Sarkisian, and it's going to kind of lay it out state by state, the offers. It's very interesting, but here's what I would say. Texas knows the home state is the most important state. So even though they're offering a bunch of kids out of state, they know they have to win in state. They're focused on winning in state. But the reality is, even your great states, Florida, Texas, Georgia now, which I think is ahead of California, that doesn't mean you're great at every position in every cycle. Defensive line in Texas next year, ziffy in 2024. Alex January is a guy that Texas would take. Outside of that, you don't really see it. So they're going to go battle in the Southeast region. there's certain positions where you're going to get everything you need in state. That could be defensive back in this class. Maybe, maybe not. But what I'm saying is Texas values the home state. They know it's most important, but they also know to get to where they ultimately want to be, and that's playing against Georgia, that you have to go recruit the best players.
Jerry, let's throw in a fun question here for you and me. Kind of take us off this. We're getting so tied up in Texas football. Got to take one off. Eagles or Chiefs? Which way are you going?
Man, I'm not a big NFL watcher, I'll be honest. If Mahomes is healthy, it's hard to bet against him. A lot of experience there. I think it could be the Eagles be a team of destiny. You could argue it, but we'll see what happens. I don't have a strong opinion.
I'm going for the Eagles. I'm going with the Eagles. I've watched a little bit more.
What do you want? You want to see a riot in Philadelphia?
I know. My daughter's up there right now. I tell you what is happening, Jerry. Philadelphia can stop the run and run the ball.
Yeah.
And I felt like, other than Travis Kelce, the Chiefs don't have a go-to receiver right now. Right.
That's true.
They've tried, and they just don't have it. So it's not like they have Tyreek Hill. Right. He's running around wide open every single time that Patrick Mahomes tries to drop back the pass. And so I just think it's a little bit different. I also think the Eagles' defense a little bit stronger.
Hey, by the way, we need to mention something, Bobby. This is not a back pat for you and I, but it kind of is. Because this is fun stuff to talk about. In our 24/7 sports days, you called me and said, talk to a high school coach or a longtime connection. There's a D lineman down in Mississippi, committed to Mississippi State, that you might want to drive down from Nashville and go see. It was Chris Jones. And I'll never forget the funniest thing about Chris Jones, and it's amazing. You know, Robert Kimdichie and Reuben Foster and Chris Jones were our top three recruits. And we had Kimdichie 1, Jones 2, Foster, I believe, stayed 3. None of us believed Kimdichie because we just kind of knew he had some off-the-field stuff, but he was such a dominant player at times. But Chris Jones, where he came from and where he's at now, to me is amazing after seeing him in person. And Mississippi State, it was the funniest thing. When you went into that high school, it was all Mississippi State coaches on that staff. Like, nobody could get in. Those police officers would pull over an Alabama coach before they let him into that school. Okay, that kid had to go to state. They had to keep the state. Ole Miss made a run. Alabama tried to make a run. But it's amazing where he was the day I was there and where he's at now, which this guy's got a chance to wear a yellow jacket if he stays healthy. A
couple guys that's happened to. I got told that by a high school coach. I was in Mississippi for the Texas Ole Miss game.
Yeah.
That year in Oxford. And an old high school coach, and I went to go look at a couple of kids and was talking to one of them, said, you know, the best kid in the state's the guy down in Houston County, I think it was.
That's Houston County.
Yeah. And I go, what? And I looked in the database, and the only kid I could find was him, and he was a two-star. And I'm like, the best kid in the state of Mississippi? And I called Jerry, and Jerry's like, well, I mean, I go – all I know is they said he's probably going to go to Mississippi State. The next day you were down there and you sent me a picture back of Chris Jones in high school. I hope you still have it.
I do.
He was like 6'4", 6'5", with like an 83-inch wingspan.
Yes.
And looked like, 235 pounds. And I was just like, oh, my God. Yeah, they hide guys down there. And yes, that he was completely hidden from the rest of everybody. All right, let's get back to some Texas talk here and really get going. This one from Jordan Bonner, and I think this is a legitimate question because a lot of people overvalue recruiting rankings or overemphasize them without the proper context. Jordan asks, should we be concerned if we don't see the early enrollees we expect to see play? Example, Hill, Cook, excluding Arch, or can we chalk it up to development? Jerry, you take this question. I want to take a little bit of it too. Go ahead.
One, I would say no, because the portal changes the game. You got experienced corner Gavin Holmes, experienced safety in Jalen Catalan. that allows you to develop Derek Williams at safety. If you get a Warren Roberson, develop those guys a little bit, right? Even though he's not an early enrolling. Tavondre Sweat coming back. So Sadir Mitchell's not going to walk in and play 40 snaps a game. You get a chance to get those guys on the field, but develop them. So, no, I don't think you should be worried. I actually go the opposite way. You're building the program the right way. Those guys play a little bit. They get their feet wet. They get a year to really train and develop. And then they're ready to go year two. They play special teams. They play some in roles. But, no, I don't think – the one player I will say I would be concerned about, and I think it would only be injury, would be Cedric Baxter. Because Cedric Baxter and Jonathan Brooks have to carry the load at running back next year for me. So of all the – Malik Muhammad doesn't have to fight for a starting position next year. He just has to develop and play a little bit. Derek Williams is not an early enrollee the same. Anthony Hill's got to play, though. The linebackers, maybe, but I think it's really Cedric Baxter for me.
I want to go to this next question here. Before I do want to agree with you on one thing. Do not overestimate the value of recruiting in year one. What has changed a little bit of that is kids that come in the spring.
Yeah.
Year after year, guys that are there in the spring have a little bit of jump. A guy like Cole Hudson is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Cole Hudson starts if he comes in with everybody else in summer camp, as opposed to be there earlier. Next thing, I want to go to KD. I am the best. Jerry, crazy. Every team in the country is offering Taz Williams. This is the wide receiver. Is he 2025 or 25 out of Red Oak, Warren Roberson's teammate? Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Bama. Why has it Texas, and what are they waiting on? Sounds like he likes Texas a lot. I want to say this. It sounds, just from reading, I'm reading an Inside Texas internal chat. Texas may have just offered Lufkin defensive lineman Zion Williams a defensive lineman in 2025 earlier tonight as well. So you guys can mark that one down. Go ahead, Jerry. What do you think about Taz Williams?
Yeah, look, I will say this. You got to let Chris Jackson evaluate the wide receivers. You got a new wide receiver coach.
That's fair.
And that's an easy way out for Steve Sarkisian. Look, we have our guy, Chris Jackson. He just came to us from the NFL. He wants to take his time and evaluate you guys, see you guys. He hasn't met any of you guys. He hasn't watched any of you guys. And I think that's a very important piece here. The last thing you want to do is Chris Jackson comes in, you force him who to offer right off the bat. He needs to evaluate the state, evaluate his position, and him and Sark need to get together with the offensive staff and come to an agreement on who their guys are. I think that's where it's at.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good call. I will say this. They've got to be a little bit more. They can't be too slow on the draw.
Right.
Right. I mean, it has to be some of that. Jerry, a couple of people have mentioned about.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. This is the bad news. Some people have mentioned about the two quarterbacks both being from Texas in the Super Bowl, Pat Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. Texas really never evaluated Pat Mahomes, to my knowledge. They were stuck on Jerod Hurd, who had come off a state championship win for Denton Guyer in that class for Pat Mahomes, and never really looked around. Jalen Hurts is a different story. They actually had him in camp, but did not offer. Did Jalen Hurts want to go to Texas? You were in that high school. You saw the dad, former high school coach. What are your thoughts?
I think he would have loved to be able to drive and see his kid play more easily. So, yes, I would say if he would have been Texas's guy, Hurts would have ended up at Texas. But that same could be said for JT Barrett. Same could be said for Andrew Luck. I mean, we don't need to get into the conversation, but, boy, it could be a long one.
Yeah, and not necessarily a really fun one.
It changed, you know what I mean? Texas football for a decade.
Hey, let's talk about this, because I think this is a fair question for Texas fans to ponder, from Matt Schnell. Nayor probably not too up to speed until six games in on the bye. What do you think about that? Can we make that assumption?
I don't think so. I think he's going to be ready. As of right now, he's back. He's running now. I think he's going to be ready for the opener unless he has a setback.
Yeah, I just don't know.
2 weeks before the season. I mean, I don't think it takes 20 months to or 17 months to really rehab. I think today – modern medicine. I think he's going to be ready to roll in August.
Any word on our boys at the Senior Bowl? Let me read these out to you because I got them texted to me the other day. Hold on a second. Or not the other day, yesterday. And it's the official numbers from the game out there. I think it's the Shrine game, East-West. It is. Keandre Coburn came in at 6'1 and 1/8, 344 pounds. Had a 77-inch wingspan. Okay, 77-inch, 6'1", 344. He's an interior guy, no or zero tech or two tech at the very most in the NFL. Moro Ojomo may have made himself some money just by getting on the scales and getting out there. 6'2 and a half, I think. 293 pounds. So good. Not unbelievable or anything. Listen to this. 10 2/8 hand size, Jerry. And then an 83 3/8 wingspan.
Yeah, that gets you drafted.
That's what I'm saying. That means you can stay on the tackle and play outside.
Yeah.
At that 293 pounds, even though you're not the quickest.
Right. Right. And he's a young guy. That's got right. A long runway. He's a guy they'll want to develop.
Yeah. Don't and have anything.
He's going to be great in your franchise, in your locker room. He's got a lot of things going for him, similar to Roschon Johnson.
Let me ask you this. What did Texas list DeSean Jameson at? What size? Do you remember?
I don't remember. But I saw his measurements from the Shrine Bowl, and he literally is the same height and is almost the same weight as he was coming out of high school, which I thought was interesting. Maybe gained 5 pounds.
Yeah, 5'9", 186 officially.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Texas listed him at 6 foot.
I think he was 181 at the Under Armour game his senior year. So, I mean, he stayed in that same area, 5'9", 181 his senior year at the Under Armour game.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, let's get to some other questions. If you have questions, please get them in. We got about 5 more minutes here, not very long. I do want to say thank you to our sponsor once again. That's Energy Texas. Energy Texas is for Texans by Texans. When Energy Texas becomes your energy provider, you're dealing with and calling people in the state of Texas, not back east, not overseas, Texans. We're proud to be from the greatest state in the union and prouder still to be fighting for the little guy against big power. That's energytexas.com. A couple more questions coming in here, Jerry, and let's just get it where get what we got. One of the things that I found interesting is it sounds like the Washington offensive coordinator, University of Washington offensive coordinator, has turned down Nick Saban to go to Alabama. What do you think of that?
I kind of agree with that. I think he's in a good spot. I think they have their quarterback back. He's not breaking in a freshman quarterback in Ty Simpson. And they're the pressure cooker when Alabama is no longer the top program in college football. He's in a great spot to be the next head coach at Washington, because if the Boer is going to get snatched up by somebody at some point, he's doing too much at a young age. I think it's a great decision. Got your quarterback back. Program he can be the next head coach at. Why risk it?
817, a.k.a. Mr. Talk Too Much. I need 4 wide in 2023. Instead of the 2 wide, 1 running back, 2 tight end set that we saw much of, I think we're going to see more 3 wide. What do you think, Jerry?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think the receiver room dictates that one. I think – that's where Quinn's going to be probably most comfortable. But again, more than Quinn being comfortable, it's not about that. He's a first-year quarterback that didn't even play a senior in high school last year. It's with A.D. Mitchell and Worthy in Whittington, you say Nair comes back, Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore, Savion Redd, Brennan Thompson, you have the ability to run more 3 wide next year. I don't know if they really had the ability to do it last year as much as they wanted to. They have that this year, and I think you have a new wide receiver coach that's coming in a great situation. He can really put his stamp on these guys. I think you're going to see that position make a big jump, and I think you're going to see Sarkisian's offensive scheme open up the way people thought it would, watching him at Alabama and prior.
Two more questions here. I'm expecting big things from DJ Campbell. based on the hype when he committed? How is he doing? I want to change that question and alter it just a little bit, Jerry. Yep. Not only about DJ, but who else in that recruiting class last year do you expect to make a big jump in their second year?
Yeah, I think DJ Campbell will start at right guard unless he gets injured. He's just so athletic. I think he needed – look, you know, we had Nathan O'Neill in here talking about defensive linemen, how long it takes to be a pass rusher, right, and develop as a pass rusher. Well, think about DJ Campbell. He played as much defense as offense, okay, and he wasn't in for the spring, as you mentioned with Cole Hudson last year. So his development, it doesn't mean his ranking was off. His development just takes a little longer. I think – DJ will make a jump. I think Neto will make a jump. I think Cam Williams is going to make a jump. I'm not saying Ogbo's not. I'm not saying Connor Robertson's not. Connor Robertson made a quiet jump last year. He was the number two center all season, but Jake Majors was healthy, so he never got pushed into action. So I really look at DJ, Neto, and Cam. Year two in the program, first spring football, I think those guys are going to make big jumps headed into August.
I would have said it before, outside of offensive line, because that's where the majority of the talent was last year.
Right.
We would agree that that's, they just signed such an incredible offensive line class. Before the Alamo Bowl, I would have put money on Terrence Brooks being that
guy. That's a great one.
That, but now you can't say that, right? Because he's, people have seen it. I'm going to go with Jamon Tapp.
That's a great one.
I think that just from what I'm hearing from behind the scenes a little bit, people are liking what they're seeing from the young guy, playing through some stuff, getting in some good work. You know, let's see in the spring, though. I think I would have a better sense of that in the spring.
I think him and Bledsoe.
Okay, got it. All right. One more from Jordan Bonner. Some recruiting experts are crystal balling Deuce Robinson to Texas, Jerry. Should we be excited or take it with a grain of salt? I'm leaning grain of salt. I haven't seen anybody do it other than Mike Farrell, and Mike Farrell tries to make wild predictions. He's almost, no offense to Mike, but I feel like he's become the Skip Bayless of recruiting at some level. So,
yeah, the only predictions are Georgia, okay? Yeah. I mean, let's be real. The okay. only predictions on in the industry are Georgia right now. And if I was forced to put in an RPM today, that's where I'd put it as well. But I think there's could be a long way to go in this recruitment. So, no, I'm not buying. I'm not close to putting in an RPM for Texas. I'll say that.
Got it. All right. Hey, Jerry Hamilton of Inside Texas and On3, thank you so much. Please like and subscribe to our coverage here on All Texas Football. Also, check us out on InsideTexas.com. We have a special going on right now, $30 all the way through August 31st for first-time subscribers. That'll get you spring practice. That'll get you all of our coverage on recruiting this summer and spring. It's a value well worth it in this. I really think I've been doing this a long time, 30-plus years, and I think we have something special going on right now at InsideTexas.com. All right, for Jerry Hamilton, I'm Bobby Burton. This has been the Longhorn Live Stream on Texas Football. Thanks for watching.